Good afternoon. My name is Balázs Fejes. At this point of time, I am the co-head of EPAM Systems, and I'm responsible for the global business, which means that I'm roughly responsible for 51% of EPAM's P&L. But actually, my name is not really Balázs Fejes. Everybody just calls me FP. Or if you want to be official, like, people call me FP1. Because when I was tall, slim, with a lot of hair, and young, I started to work for a company called Obloxoft, which at that point of time was run by Mike Simon, who later on became quite famous with Log Me In. And he basically was not able to pronounce my name, and he said, "I will call you FP." And then I enjoyed the hospitality of the Hungarian army for a couple of months, meaning conscripted, right, and doing my military service. And at the same point of time, he hired another guy called FB, Balázs Fejes, and he said, I still cannot pronounce your name, the same name, so I'm going to call you, me, FB1, because you came first, and I'll call you, you who came second, FB2. And since then, with the exception of my mom, my wife, and my son, everybody kind of calls me FB. So that's where I am. So once upon a time, I worked for Obloxoft, and after that, my career took me across multiple countries. So I lived in Sweden, then I lived in Fargo, North Dakota. Yes, I saw the movie, I seen the series, I got the T-shirt. And I worked for a company which today is part of Microsoft, but after that, I returned to Hungary, and with two of my partners, Andreas Kemi and with Carl Robb, we founded a company called Fathom Technology. And I will tell you in the next 30 minutes a story how this two-bit company, which had no money to even to assemble chairs, and we were buying everything from IKEA, became listed on New York Stock Exchange, and how what happens after that. And this story will take you through multiple countries and very interesting events, and I would like to really cram it up in the next 30 minutes, all the happenings which happened to me and with my friends and with my colleagues for over 17 years. So today, EPAM is quite a large entity, right? We just announced our quarterly result, and today we are aiming for $1.4 billion. Dollar or market capitalization is over $4 billion. And we have plenty of people, we have a lot of business. But it took a while to get here, right? It took a while for us to start from something, which I started in Hungary, and how this whole thing became such a huge global entity, still rooted in Central Eastern Europe, still rooted in the fabric of this society, and how this thing scaled and how this thing became first transformed from a Central Eastern European to a more Eastern European, and later on a European, and later on a global company. And it went through multiple events. But all these things didn't start it here, right? It took us a while to get to 24,000 people. That's a big, tall order. It's actually started back in 2000. And I was looking through archives of pictures for when the first time I created this slide. And of course, it takes a lot of time because I didn't have, you know, digital cameras, and I'm just hunting through these photos. But one thing which is really interesting, that fine-looking gentleman over there is Carl, and behind it you can see certain tables, right? And particularly, take a notice of those lovely chairs. So the tables are all tabletops, and we went to IKEA. I went to IKEA regularly, and I bought the IKEA tabletops and with four legs with it, and we assembled it. First, we tried to do it with manual screwdrivers, blisters after that, and I learned it that I should get an electric screwdriver because it's easy. But more importantly, we got these chairs. They were the most expensive items after the computers in the office. But if you see the arm of the chair, you realize something. I assembled it in the wrong way. And it was assembled by myself, and after that, everybody was followed my instruction. And up to 2008, we had these chairs which were assembled in the wrong way. And people keep telling us that this is wrong. No, but this is the style of EPAM. So now you get my first gripe on startups today. when I go in and visit them, I see their fancy furniture. I don't think you should do that. I think you should go back to the basics. So we started, right? We started to focus on the key thing. We tried to escape the typical trap. The typical trap of a internet startup or a software company. We were a software services company. To focus on local customers and eventually try to scale to global scale. This is, I think, complete bollocks, if I can say that. You should never do that. You should always target your customer, the real customer who you really want to go after. So in the first year, after, of course, working for such a global leaders like SylvesterStallone.com, we basically landed a couple of really interesting customers. First Microsoft, then BAE Systems. Because we focused on our target customer. How did we done that? Is we made sure that we sold it. The only people who can really sell this point of time is the founders, because they were the only one who are passionate enough to really go out and start selling a non-existent product. Of course, you need some help. And the real help came with an invention. And this is a picture of that invention. You think this is just a company logo, but this company logo had an amazing feature. It was compatible with the company logo next door. So when our customer visited, very conveniently, every door, every place, we replaced the company logo, smoke and mirrors. They believed we were so big that we occupied multiple offices. Of course, we were only 13 people, and I was assembling chairs, and I was recruiting people, and trying to convince others that this eventually will be a huge, huge company. Now, to get really to this level, we needed capital. In 2002, finally, we were able to raise some capital from Euroventures, and last night, Tom made sure that asked me several times to mention Euroventure at least three times, so I'm going to want to. Euroventure, this is the third time, so I've done my job. And we raised the capital in 2002, and we believe that we are off to success. We're going to be successful. Except in 2002, the Hungarian forint started to strengthen against the US dollars. And of course, we didn't have any currency hedging, right? We paid our engineers in Hungarian forint, and the US dollar went from 305 to eventually 160. Our business was almost bust, right? Especially because our CFO at that point of time forgot to click the right point to claim back VAT quarterly, so we're only claiming back VAT annually. So it didn't work out too well. So we were in trouble. So we were in really, really in trouble. And I was waking up every morning and checking the exchange rate. And it went down. Every time it went down by a couple of percentage, I was considering, should I fire everybody before our cash run out? So we felt we are in trouble. By 2003, we were ready to do something else. We had to do something else. We had to get out of this. That point of time, we felt the prison, and the prison of the exchange rates. And we were ready for everything. We were ready for raising money, selling the company. We were ready for expanding to Romania. So I visited multiple companies around, or acquiring something, multiple companies in Romania, Ukraine, Russia. And in 2003, September, there was what's today called the legendary St. Pete Outsourcing Conference. Carl met Arkady Dobkin, CEO of EPAM Systems. Actually, Carl, till today, doesn't remember that he met Arkady, because that was too much Ruski Standard Platinum, right? So that happens if you drink that much. So he was not remembering meeting Arkady and agreeing that we're going to meet in Budapest and discuss some transaction. But eventually we met, and we agreed on a transaction where EPAM and Fathom gets together and forms Central Eastern Europe's largest IT services company, whipping 600 people all together. Today, it's, for me, it's a laughable number, but at that point of time, that was just something amazing. I'm actually sitting over there. As you can see, I'm really good looking. I'm sitting in front of Zhuravinka Hotel in Minsk. Next to me, it's Arkady, and Carl was taking a picture. And what was happening, probably 10 minutes after this, picture was taken, I got a call, and this idyllic scenario ended because I had to sort out some visa issues as some of our guys got stuck at customs in the US. So we got together, we decided to go for a ride. And the way we went for a ride, we made a decision that the company together, we want to go public around 2008, 2010 period. And that's our goal. We want to create the foundation, and we want to scale the company. And from there on, from now on, I really joined. I became part of EPAM. And the way we joined, we became a founding executives of this new company. And we went for a ride. And this ride was, how can we get ourselves to go public somewhere around 2008, 2009? That was the goal. And this graph really shows what happened next. Of course, you know, nothing goes as smooth as, you know, in the plans, right? Nothing survives the last minute once the battle started. So we started to scale. We raised some money. We raised the money from Russia partners. And we done some acquisitions. And together, we started to form a company. And we started to scale it. And we got to 2008, when I learned a new expression called mezzanine financing, which was amazing, right? I was jetting around with private jets in Europe, coming from Minsk to Budapest on a private jet with investors, and we were raising money. And we were ready to go public at the end of the year. This is 2008, February. So everybody around in the audience now knows what happens next, right? By 2008, October, I was laying off people. I made the index layoff calculator. Even today, if you look it up on Google, our names are there. We laid off 1,000 people. That's a lot of people to be like. You know, it took a while. It's actually quite difficult to lay off people. It's very, very difficult to, not emotionally, because today I'm really proud about it that we've done it, right? It's not emotionally. It's logistically. That's a lot of people to lay off, but we've done it. And you know what? Today, we wouldn't hire any manager in EPAM who never done before a layoff, because it changes you. Right? So we laid off the people. So we didn't go public, and it took a while to get back. We didn't go public till 2012. So it took us 4 years to get to the next level. Right? We had to recover from the 2008, and we had to start growing again. And this is a picture of New York Stock Exchange on the day when we went public. And there's a couple of things which is important about this day. Number one, I'm not on the picture. And it's even today, this is a funny story. The story is, and the way I'm going to tell it, I have to put down the clicker because otherwise I cannot really do this. So, this is 2008, February the 7th, 5:45 in the morning. I'm in my Q7, driving down Zurich Lake, because by this point, after the 2008 collapse, we had to start new business. So in 2008, end of 2008, early 2009, we moved ourselves to Switzerland. So I started off a new financial services practice, and today this is one of the growing engine of EPAM, and started to work for UBS, who today is our largest customer. So back to 2012. So I'm driving down the Seestrasse, listening to music, right? I'm daydreaming, right? I'm receiving some SMSs, but I don't care about it. The phone is beeping. I don't care about it. I'm just listening. I'm actually listening to Sopranos, right? The opening scene of Sopranos. wake up this morning, got yourself a gun. You know, this, I'm going to New Jersey, flying to New York, and listening to this. I don't care about the SMSs. And then my phone starts to ring. It's Carl. Pick up, pick up. What's up? I said, okay, all right. The IP was off. Why? I'm going to the airport. Don't worry about it. The IP is on tomorrow. No, it's off. The order book is not filling. Of course, I started to swear and everything. And turns out that 1 week before, a Dutch company tried to go public, AVG, and it was a total flop. The IPO process, so the bankers wanted to pull us. So I canceled my flight, went to the office, started to work, and I said, okay, if we don't go public, I buy a ticket and I visit my customer in London. And I was absolutely upset about this. So went to bed, because in order to get to London in the morning, you have to wake up at 4:30. So I went to bed pretty early, I was sleeping, and I received a phone call just around 11:30 from Arkady. And he's actually calling me from the private jet, because they were shutting around and trying to, wrote a show to fill the order book. And the question he asked was the following: are you okay to go public, but we have to reduce the offering, meaning how many shares we're going to issue, and we have to reduce the price? So originally, the price was supposed to be between $16 to $18. We had to drop it to $12. Are you okay to do this? I said, yes. Of course, after that, I was not able to sleep. But next morning, I woke up at 4:30, went to London, and I watched all these things happening on video, right? We went public. Then I had a meeting at Canary Wharf, and there's quite a nice steakhouse just next to the Thomson Reuters building. And the Thomson Reuters building has a sticker on it. And I was not too happy eating my steak. And the only time when I got really happy, when I started to see the EPAM logo coming up on the light show, right? That was really funny. So this is the story of going public. Now, I'm still really happy this has happened, right? We went public at $12, but today we are at 81. So probably this was an okay decision. But one more thing why this is important. I think this is the only time you had a Belarusian, Ukrainian, Polish, Russian, Hungarian, Swiss, and I don't know what else, flag on New York Stock Exchange. I think it's a regional success. I mean, we are immensely proud of that. But after going public, I had to get used to a couple of other things. First of all, not just the quarterly events of showing quarterly results and announcing it, but I had to get used to the fact that everybody knew about my trades and my compensation. It's kind of funny to negotiate salaries when, you know, your subordinate knows what how much you earn and how much bonuses you are making, right? On the other hand, these days you can really judge bankers. So my conversation with bankers are probably lasting 5 seconds if they ask the question, so how much do you make? It means that you never Googled me, right? So after this, we realized one thing, that we have no plan. Up till now, since EPAM acquired Fathom, we only worked to go public. And we ran out of plan. We had no plan. So it took us a year to create our mission statement. You see, you don't need a mission statement to create a startup, right? It's a lot of waste of money and waste of effort. You don't need that. We had no marketing, because you don't need marketing if you want to be, do a startup. You can get to an IPO level without a marketing department, without a mission statement, and by the way, without a HR department. We had no HR, we had no marketing, and we were able to get by. Again, that's a message, subtle message to today's startups. So we got to this point, So we had to create a marketing department. We had to do certain things to turn ourselves to a real company, right? So we came up with something like this. And this was really our first attempt to formulate a message, to create an identity, who we are, what do we want to do. And it took us 1 year to formulate that. But the real message behind this is that we wanted to double the company in every 3 years. That was the real goal. And we wanted to find a market which allows us to do that. And we found a market which called product development services market, which is a space which we exist in. And after that, it kind of happened, right? Of course, on a graph, it looks amazing, right? That you went from, we went public at 430, and we closed 2050 around $914 million, right? It's a straight line. Except a couple of other things happened in the meantime, right? We had to create a new type of services in order to scale to this level. We had to get to new markets. We had to open up new offices. In the middle of everything, we got the Ukrainian crisis. And, you know, first of all, it was a BCP problem, right? Business continual planning problem, planning out escape routes and moving people and figuring out where to put it. But eventually, it had also dire consequences. Most of you don't know about it, but at the moment when the crisis started, out of the three leading banks of Europe, the three leading banks of Europe had 5,000 software engineers in Ukraine. Today, they have close to 200. So over 4,800 jobs moved to Poland, Hungary, Romania, and Czech Republic. And now you're wondering why IT salaries are going up so fast. Because there were no free 4,800 engineers on these markets. So it was a tremendous exercise. And to continue scaling, it was really difficult. But we managed it. But you see, for us, it's long gone, right? 2015, we run out of a plan, right? After that, we had to formulate a new message. After that, we had to do something beyond achieving the three-year goal. And we came up with another plan, right? Again, kind of simplistic, right? The simplistic message, again, we want to double the revenue in 3 years. And the way we want to double it, and the reason why we want to double it, because we want to prove our leadership in a segment. We're kind of repeating the same thing, right? You kind of got the message, right? We are about growth. The only thing what we like to do is growing. I don't like to go into an office and just pretend that we're going to grow by 5% or with the inflation rate for single digits. You know, the growth has to be meaningful. 20, 30, 40, 50%. That's what we're talking about. And this is what we started to focus on to take us to the next level. But in order to do that, we had to make sure that the market starts recognizing us. Remember, now we have a marketing department. We had nothing before. So first, we got recognized as in a leadership position in a space which is kind of defined by the market as product engineering services. So we led the space, and in the size of the bubble, it represents the size of a company. So we were racing with quite a large players. Then later on, we got recognized as the top commerce provider. And then we got recognized as really leading a certain segment. And that was really satisfying, right? It was really satisfied us. And what was also satisfying where we realized that we're not just leading in this category. We're not just leading in Central Eastern Europe, but we are one of the fastest growing companies in this segment in the world. In one point, we were the fastest growing tech company in North America, which was, again, an interesting thing to do. And we continuously, every year, went through this growth curve. And with it, our headcount grew. With it, we became something else. First, it was just US, Hungary, Belarus. Then it became much more. It's Ukraine. And right now, when I'm doing town halls, I'm asking the audience, can you quiz all these different countries where we have an office and where we have a development center? And most of them, you know, missing a couple of them. So today, it's a global company. We changed. We not just changed because of the growth, but because of the growth, we had to become somebody else. Because in order to grow this fast, we had to change our identity. And our identity today is defined by these messages. Our identity today is that we think about ourselves as technologists and thinkers. Thinkers who help the world transform. And we're doing it every day. And we believe that we can change the world by choosing to help some of the most innovative customers to transform themselves. Transformation is everything. If you don't transform, you go extinct, right? Darwinism. Also applicable to companies and to our customers. When I was preparing this presentation, I ran into an email which was sent by the head of our Budapest office. And he actually found my digital footprint. And my digital footprint is actually coming from an era where I was doing recruitment, right? So at that point of time, I wanted to be very innovative how I'm recruiting. So I posted messages to index.edu. And this is one of my ads promising the audience that the company is going to be over 300 people. And 3 years later, and then 4 years later, somebody responded that, what's up with that? And honestly, I forgot about this post. I forgot about this. Probably I don't even know the email address or the password, how to get into this forum anymore. But do you guys think I should post something today? Because I really want to write that, sorry for being late with the answer. I was kind of busy. We are at 24,000 people level. How are you doing? Mizus felétek. Thank you very much.